Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. My friends, the last couple of days we've been talking about the fact that most people live lives of quiet desperation, that they really haven't figured out how to get out of the rat race that they're living in. They haven't figured out how someday they won't have to get up and go to work and struggle and drive to work and be miserable and live in a cubicle and all the negative stuff that comes with having a full-time job that you don't like and really is not fulfilling. You know, you're living a life that on the surface seems like a normal life, maybe even a happy life. You've got a job, which a lot of people don't. That's made you happy. You've got maybe a spouse, maybe you don't, kids, and you know, a place to live, and life seems good. On the surface, everything seems okay. The challenge comes when you look at you're now 25, you're now 35, you're now 45, you're now 55, somewhere along in your life that you hit this wall. And you say to yourself, this is too much. I've been doing this for too long. And I'm looking down the tunnel, and I don't see any light. Sometimes I've heard a lot of people say to me, you know, Del, I went to see my financial planner. You know, we're doing an annual review of, you know, how much money I've been saving and, you know, what will that end up doing for me in retirement and so on and so forth. They come away from that meeting with the concept that this isn't working. I'm not getting anywhere. Now, you then hear something crazy like my radio show, and you hear about myself who figured that out at a much earlier age in my 20s, late 20s, and started looking for places to become an entrepreneur and looking for places to make passive streams of income. And you hear that I retired by 34 years of age, and that's even more frustrating for you. So there's no way, nobody could do it, it can't happen, whatever. Well, it did happen. It's happened for thousands of people since then. You know, it's 36, 37 years ago that I did that, but we've had thousands of people do it. All you're simply doing is replacing your earned income with passive streams of income. It's simple enough when you explain it that way. The question, though, comes down to when the rubber meets the road. How do you actually do that, right? And then I start getting lots of the same questions. And so today, instead of just picking up specific questions from the email list, I'm going to use a generalized format as to what I get questioned quite a bit over the last 36 years of helping people. And that is something along these lines. I, myself, or my parents, or my friend, or my wife, or my boss or somebody has owned a piece of rental property in the past. They realized they needed this stream of income, and they went out and they bought this rent house, or they obtained this rent house, and it was a disaster for them. There you go. There's the basis. That is your belief system on this, right? And when you look at it that way, how could you even get motivated to do it? If somebody else already tried it and it was a disaster, wouldn't you believe it's going to be a disaster? You now know what won't work. You know, there is failure possibilities here. And the pain and the struggle is just outrageous. I get why you had those types of results or somebody else had those types of results. It's because of the way you approach the whole process. So today what I'd like to do is I'd like to give you a framework for thinking about the whole process is what I want you to think about here. Where and how do I look at this thing so that it makes sense, so that it doesn't become a burden, so it actually does what it's supposed to do, which is to create passive streams of income. So the starting point is somewhere along the lines of this, because I learned it trial and error. I learned it through different educational formats that I took, different classes I took, different books I read, mostly books I read. And then I integrated it into what I was doing, which is single-family rent houses when I started, later into small apartments, then later into large apartments. So this integration process took many years to complete. It took a few years to figure it out, and then it took many years to improve it and to complete it. Boom. what and where did it start? It started with the concept that I read in a book called E-Myth Revisited by a guy named Michael E. Gerber. And his basis on this book was that he believes that the entrepreneurial, that's what the E stands for, entrepreneurial myth here, is that people actually decide to go into business as a business, as an entrepreneur, and set up a business as an entrepreneur. Whereas he believes that's not true. He believes what happens is people that have no idea how to run a business, no idea how to set a business up, no idea how to operate a business, simply take on the concept that that's something I can do. Because why? Because you can do it. So you then think, I can have a rent house. Why can I have a rent house? Well, because I own a home. There you go. If I own a home, I can own a rent home. Pretty simple. And there's no business savvy behind any of that thought. They go, you know, if something goes wrong, I can fix it. I can fix a lot of things. That'll save me money that I can fix things. And there you go again. There's no business savvy behind any of that. And so when I read this and I thought about, you know, how I work my way through this whole process, I got lucky on a few issues. And some issues, because I got lucky, I learned right up front the pros and the cons of what's important and not important. But Gerber goes on and explains it in a little more detail, saying that there are three different people in every business. And one of them is the entrepreneur, the person who focuses on the future. They're the person that sees where you're going and knows what this is all about. That's this radio show. It's about, hey, we know where we're going. In fact, the best story I ever heard that explains this is a group of people, and I think it was in South America, they were trying to build a road through the jungle. And so they had this giant crew of people working there, and some people were cutting trees down. Other people were cutting the trees up into small bunches and grinding them up and driving them away and taking away and logging the wood away and so on and so forth. Other people were there as support systems. There were doctors there and medical people. Other people were support systems that, like, were making the food for all the people there so they could eat and work, you know, in shifts and so forth. Other people were technical people that were sharpening the saws and making sure all the equipment worked so they could do their work. And other people were just actually the grinders. They would get out there and cut the trees down and do the work and haul the stuff away, and just, they were the muscle. And then it said, there's the managerial group of people. These are the people that set the schedules. Okay, we're going to cut and we're going to have two different teams, and they're going to work. This team's going to work from this hour to this hour. They're going to break. This team's going to come in, and they're going to work from this hour to this hour, and we're going to rotate these shifts, and we're going to rotate the people in and out. We're going to work 7 days a week, but, you know, one shift's going to work 4 days a week. The next shift's going to work three. The next week, that one shift will work 4 days a week, and then the other shift will work three, et cetera, et cetera. How it ever works, managerial people figure it out. They execute it. They get it done. And then there's the entrepreneurial person. Right? So you got the technical person out there busting his butt, getting the stuff done. You get the managerial person out there making sure they get it done effectively. And then you've got the entrepreneur up there at the top, climbs up to the top of the tree and looks out across the jungle and says, hey, guys, we're going the wrong direction. Yeah, you all know how to cut down trees. You all know how to get everything done. But we're going the wrong way. That's what the entrepreneur does. The entrepreneur figures out where you're going and why, and sets the map. So the first thing is that when you think about this, you got to start with the bigger picture in mind and think, okay, look, first thing is that the most important thing is that the tenant pays the rent. And so you have a tenant. That's the thing most people fear. They fear, I can't get a tenant for this house, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that, to overcome that, is almost impossible until you realize that absolutely everybody needs a place to live, and the demand for a rent house is unbelievable. Single-family rent houses are in demand like you wouldn't believe. You say, well, why does anybody have one that's not rented? A couple of reasons. Number one, it's in terrible repair. People don't want to live in a torn-up house, and a lot of people just try to rent it. Think, hey, I'm a slumbag, I'm a scumbag, I'm an idiot, I'll live in a place like that. So somebody else would too. Or maybe I'm not that kind of person, but, you know, the people who rent, they are, they'll take anything, right? As soon as you pick up that attitude, your product is terrible. I mean, think about it, you go somewhere and you went to a counter of a food store and you saw roaches crawling across the counter and rats running around behind the counter. Would you eat there? No, you just leave. And they go, I don't understand. We got the best food in town. Nobody's eating here. There's something wrong. This business doesn't work. No, it's not the business don't work. You don't work. You don't have the system down. So the first concept I want to put in your mind is something called best product, best price. You've got to have a product that people want. And number two, it's got to be at a price they're willing to pay. What you don't understand is the market knows what that price is. And we're going to find it. And that's why you come to my class, is I teach you how to use technology to find that price and rent your property at a price that will instantly rent, where it will be, boom, demanded. Now, if you know that before you buy it, the second part of the thing is that many people buy houses or have houses as rental properties that don't positive cash flow. Well, the whole idea is to have positive cash flow. Well, to do such, you have to buy it for the right price. With the right price and the right financing, you now have a mortgage payment. And if you have a rent payment that's above the mortgage payment, boom, positive cash flow, money in the mail, simple. Tenant moves in, they stay there 4 or 5 years, and you've got money coming in the door 4 or 5 years until you have to do the whole thing over again. Beautiful stuff, right? Now you get yourself 10 of those, and you've got a good stream of income. So what could possibly go wrong? Well, the next thing that possibly go wrong is stuff breaks, which comes back to the original purchase. Why did we buy a house that has stuff that's going to break? And then you get into the reality that I've found when I help people before they come to Lifestyles, is that many people have done one of a couple things. One, they've inherited a rent house. They inherited their grandma's house, their parents' house, or two of them got married and they each had a house and they turned one of them into a rent house. And so what they've done is they've taken a house that was not in perfect condition and put it on the marketplace. Well, you know stuff wears out. Water heater's going to wear out. Air conditioner's going to wear out. Furnace is going to wear out. Dishwasher's going to wear out. Stove's going to wear out. Refrigerator's going to wear out. We know that. So if you buy this house or you take this house either from your grandparents giving it to you or you consolidate and get married or whatever, and you realize this home is old or older, then you have to realize this stuff is going to wear out. And there's going to be the cost of that along with your mortgage payment. How do we overcome that? Well, there's two ways we've overcome it. And the first one for me was just by luck. First couple of houses I bought, the guy that helped me, Bill, had me buy Fannie Mae foreclosures, which at the time, and they don't do it now, but then foreclosures, they were, Fannie Mae was completely remodeling these things, almost brand new. New roof, new air conditioners, new furnace, new appliances, new paint jobs, everything. And so I was getting a house that was practically new when I bought it. Hence, there was nothing to go wrong with it for years and years and years. The only thing that could go wrong with a house that's practically new is tenant damage. But because I understood contracts, because I had worked as a finance manager in a finance company, and I understood, you know, you sign a contract, it says this, it says that, you got to live up to it. I realized that the leasing agreement stated that anything the tenant broke, they had to pay for. And there were clauses in there on how to get that money, how to make them pay for it. Say, well, Dale, you can't make Purple Martians pay. You're right. You can't. So the question is, why did you put a Purple Martian in? Say, well, that was the only person who would rent my house. You're right. Why was that? Well, because my house was a piece of garbage. Or, and sometimes even more likely, because you're asking more than what the house is really truly worth for rent. Like, for instance, if you bought a house, you paid way too much for it, you paid full market price, and you have a high interest rate and you have a large mortgage, and you're trying to make the payment, you believe that rent should be equated to your mortgage payment. It's not. In fact, rent isn't even equated to the size or the price of your home at all. Rent is equated to what people are willing to pay to live in that area. And so you've got the wrong analogy. They're not hooked up right. And you end up with a property where it doesn't cash flow. So you say, well, how do you avoid that? Well, the way we avoid it in Lifestyles is we either buy turnkey houses that have already been totally renovated and turn them into rental houses, which we do. Or, and that's the way I started, and in doing so, I was buying foreclosures, so I still got a good price on them. Some of these deals you'll get just a moderate price on, but they'll be low enough that you'll cash flow because you know going in what the price is and what the rent is. So you'll be able to calculate the return before you even start. The second way is we buy houses that are totally destroyed. Or not totally destroyed. They're destroyed in some way, shape, or form, and they need a lot of work. And hence what we do is we go in and we negotiate a very low price for these houses, and then we renovate them. And when we renovate them, we bring them back to almost perfect again. So now the water heaters, the air conditioners, the furnaces, the roof, the plumbing, the electrical, they all work. They're all great. And when everything has been renovated and brand new or checked off on a checklist and inspected, you should get 5 years out of something like that, which is plenty long enough for one tenant to go through it. Now, if the tenant stays longer than 5 years, you shouldn't have a problem with maybe one water heater wearing out. You know, the bottom line is it's how you approach this whole process. The difference. You have to start with the entrepreneurial first, thinking this is where we're going. This is what we have to set this system up to look like, and not vice versa, letting it just happen to us and then be unhappy about what happens. So when we come back, I'm going to talk about your process in this. Where do you fit in? We'll take a short break. Be right back with the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Teaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Walmsley Radio Show returns in moments.
Tired of chasing trends or guessing what works? Lifestyles Unlimited teaches a strategy-focused approach to real estate investing that starts with education. Text radio to 88007. That's RADIO to 88007.
You're hearing the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. Today we're discussing how you should be looking at your entrepreneurial activity of creating passive streams of income. We're starting with single-family houses today. And we've talked about the fact that you've, number one, have to buy the right house. You have to buy the right house for the right price. You have to buy the right house that it's, and if the price is low enough that we can renovate it and make it perfect for people to move into. Both of those things, when that's done, there has to be a mortgage payment that allows for positive cash flow. We have to have bought some equity into the house if we're really going to make this thing profitable. In other words, if the house was worth $200,000 and we bought it for $100,000, put $50,000 in it for renovation, so we own it for $150,000, but the after repaired value is really $200,000. Wow, we just made $50,000. So that's another aspect of what we're looking for in this situation. So now we go down to, okay, well, where should you be involved? And this is one of the things that Gerber really works on. He talks about the fact that people want to get involved. I explain it this way. Most people believe that time equals money. You get up and go to work, you get paid money. You work overtime, you get more money. It's basically time equals money. You've been taught that your whole life. How many hours are you going to work today? How much do you get paid today? That's it. So to them, everything is equated down to your time. And what do you have that's absolutely free to you when you're young? When you're young, freedom is time. When you're old, freedom is time. That's the one thing that's free. And so when you get your first rent house and somebody says, wow, the dishwasher's not working, instead of calling out an appliance guy to go over there and look at it, you're going to go over there and try it out yourself. Now, I did this stupid stuff when I first started because I thought, I can save some money. Dishwasher can't be that hard. It's either working or not working. And if it is not working, I need to know if I can, I need to buy a new one. Back when I started on dishwasher, only cost $125. I don't know what they cost now, $400 or $500. I wouldn't even know. But back then, I'd go over there and see. So I'd go over there, and what I'd find is that they hadn't turned the switch on. There's a switch on the dishwasher, but there's also a switch above the sink where the power goes to the plug where the dishwasher is plugged into. And almost every time I found that they hadn't turned the plug on, the switch on. So one of the things that happens is that you get smarter as you do this stuff. You get educated on what the problems are, and you are able to make quicker and better, faster decisions without you being so involved. So now somebody calls me about the dishwasher thing, whether it's a home or apartment or whatever, the first thing you do is go try turn that switch on. Oh, gosh. Because very few times does a dishwasher ever just stop. It just doesn't happen that way. You know, it gets dirty, it gets old, it doesn't work very well, and then it wears out. But just stop is not very often, right? So especially if we have brand new dishwasher in there, that's not going to go out right away like that. And if we have an old one and we know it's really, really old, then we know, okay, go turn the switch on. No, it's not. Okay, well, maybe it's time for a new dishwasher. We would know that, right? So now we move on and say, what about things like, you know, the toilet's clogged up? Well, if you first start out, you know what you're doing. You say, okay, I'll run over there and I'll clog the toilet for them. No, that's not. It's in the lease. If the toilet's clogged up, the tenant has to unclog it. They clogged it. It wasn't clogged when they moved in. It's clogged now. They did it. Then you send a plumber over. See, if they can't figure out how to do it, you send a plumber over at their cost. And the plumber will tell you whose fault it is. You know, they cleaned out the pipe, and what did they find? Usually it's a kid's toy, or it's a tampon, or a bunch of tampons, Tampax, you know, women's stuff. Baby diapers is a big one, you see. But this is your tenant doing it. Now, when that plumber goes over there and finds that stuff, you have them take pictures of it. Send it to you immediately, because you're paying the plumber. You go, hey, let's get this here. And as soon as you know that they stopped it up, you immediately send them the pictures and say, look, you owe me for this. This is this plumbing work. You might as well go ahead and pay the plumber while he's there. And if they don't want to pay the plumber while he's there, then you say, okay, well, then I'm going to send you a bill and you need to pay me. Again, I'm not going out there. I'm not doing the work. I'm not paying for the work because I know what I'm doing now in this business. I know that the pipes were not bad because I checked the pipes when I bought the house. I know the plumbing worked when we bought the house. If the plumbing doesn't work today, if the water just out of nowhere stops flowing down the toilet, something's in there. Something did it. Somebody had to do that. Toilets don't clog themselves. It's just like, you know, I think I'll be clogged today. I'm tired of working. I'll just go ahead and clog myself up. Nope, doesn't work that way, right? So then you start looking at, okay, what other kinds of repairs can you do? I'll go over there and fix the door that doesn't work or this or that or whatever. And the reality is that what Gerber talks about is you've got to stop doing the work. You have to stop working in the business as the technician, and you have to learn to become the manager, to manage other people to do the work. So you get yourself a handyman. When somebody moves out, when a tenant moves out, it's required that you replace all the locks. Well, one of the things I found is that the only locks you have to replace are the double-sided deadbolts. You don't have to replace the ones in the handles because they're not required. So what you do is you just take the handles that have locks in them off and put passage handles in and put in two-sided deadbolts. And then when someone moves out, you go over there with one more set of locks and you take off all the deadbolts, the two sides of them, and put on the new ones. Take all the old ones, put them in the boxes of the new ones you just bought, and save them. Now, once you get a technician guy works for you, you can teach them the same thing. Hey, look, we've got our set of locks, right? We have one set of quick sets we keep. Take it over there and replace the locks. Somebody moved out, please go change all the locks for us right away. Keep all of the old ones, right? Because we're going to use them at the next house when somebody moves out. That's how it works. And number one, you learn how to do stuff like that. Number two, you learn how to teach your technicians to do stuff like that so you're not doing stuff like that. And so you get better at what you're doing. You learn to manage the work instead of do the work. Obviously, I'm not an AC guy, so I never did AC work. But you do get smarter at what is wrong with air conditioners. For example, one of the things you find very commonly is that the circuit breaker went off. So the first thing to do is have your circuit breakers listed very clearly on your circuit breaker box, which ones are for what, and then go, okay, go out there and there's a circuit breaker there. It should say air conditioner, main house, air conditioner, bedroom, master bedroom, whatever. Check for any of those breakers being off. Just check and see. If they are, turn it back on. And then if it goes back off again, then we know we have a problem with the air conditioner. But sometimes there's just an electrical surge. Boom, it goes off. And so you save yourself a trip. Just a little conversation, save yourself a trip. Now, This is all being in the position of managing your first one, two, three, four, five rent houses. At some point, you get to enough volume where you literally can hire a management company to manage and make sense of it, and or your own staff member. At that point, you're now an entrepreneur. You're now not managing the business. You're managing the manager of the business. And this is the final step. And this is where we're all aiming to be, in that I own a tremendous amount of real estate. There are people that run all of it. I don't run any of it anymore. When I first started, had my first 8 houses, I ran those 8 houses. I think I got up to 11 houses. Once I got to 11 houses, that was the last of what I actually operated myself. Because at that point, the next thing I did was I bought 5 duplexes together that was 10 units. In this 10 units, I took one of the tenants and made them a manager of the location. So now that person was the one that did all of the managing. They collected all the rents for me, deposited the money in the bank. They put out all the late notices and eviction notices. If something needed to be rented, they put the sign in the yard with their telephone number so people would call them and make appointments and show the units. Was anything need to be repaired, they would go look at it first to make sure it actually was something that needed to be repaired. And if so, then call the vendor that I had set up. That was part of my job. I set the vendors up. I got the prices we needed. And if a vendor was called in to do something, they would go look at the work and send me a bid. Say, here's what I found. Here's what it's going to be. And so then I would say, okay, go ahead and do the work. And boom, they do the work and send me the pictures of the repairs before and after. And I'd pay them. I was not running around doing anything anymore. And that's when it became obvious that I could own more houses. But the next level is really the variable that most of you miss. And that is, you are turning over a property that you own, an asset that you own, to another human being and saying, I'm giving you the control of this property in return for rent. Now, in this agreement between us, you have agreed to maintain this property. And here are your requirements. This is what you're supposed to do. Now, I've seen people err on this two ways. One, they've taken their own personal residence and turned it into a rental property, a home that is their dream home, a home that their heart and soul was in, and the colors and the painting and the immaculate stuff they've done to make it so cute and the way they wanted to live. And they put somebody else in there who doesn't care one bit about any of that. And they just wear the house out, which is okay. Except if that's driving you nuts, you're not going to like this business. You have to realize nobody cares about your home the way you care about your home. This is just a place to live. It's sheetrock, carpet, and paint. Nobody is going to love your home like you do. And by the way, if they tell you they do, they're probably BSing you. And you've got problems down the line coming because they're going to try to use that against you because they're trying to get you to love them. So you'll adopt them so they can come back and say, I'm sick and I can't work and I can't pay and I can't this. But all that is very easy to forecast in most cases because you can look at their history and leopards don't change their spots. People who don't pay rent don't pay rent. People who break leases, right? People have bad credit. And you can require a screening of this tenant for credit, criminal, rental history, employment history, and income. And if you check all 5 of those when you come into our class and we teach you how to do this, if you check all 5 of those and you understand the parameters of how much risk is brought to bear with each one of those not being perfect, then you'll understand how much risk you're taking. And if you understand the risk, you can mitigate the risk to some degree by getting a larger security deposit from them, large enough such that if they do something wrong, you might even come out better off. Hard to believe, but I've had that situation happen. I've had so much security deposit on people that when they were done, I've even had to evict them. And even after the eviction, I go, you know what? I took out the rent you owed me. I took out the late fees you told me. I took out the eviction charges you owed me. I took out the cleaning charge that you owed me. And I fixed the stuff that you broke. And all of that, I still have like $100 left of your money. Here's your $100 back. People go like, you got to be kidding me. Yeah, after all of the hassle, it didn't cost me a dime for you to be here. All the late fees, all the time down, all came out of your security deposit. But that's because I understand risk. And I teach you that in the two-day seminar. I teach you risk in the other classes we have. Because I managed a finance company when I was a younger gentleman. That was my first job. And my job was to lend money to people and then go collect it. Well, after doing that for 2 or 3 years, you very quickly figure out who the purple Martians are. You figure out who will pay and who will not. And once you've got that sense of that, you're going to be right 90-95% of the time. There's always that one or two, you know, cuckoo for Cocoa Puff people that have never quite yet blown up and gone cuckoo. And it happens. But 95% of the time, you're going to be able to tell these people went cuckoo before, and now you know what you're up against, right? In what way, shape, and form. So the tenant becomes the variable. If you put the right tenant in there, then it's unbelievable. I've seen tenants be terrible, and I've seen tenants be incredible. I've had tenants that actually had the feeling they had to leave the house in better shape than what they gave it to you. They thought that if they didn't, they wouldn't get their security deposit back. Really, all they have to do is leave it not destroyed. And then if they clean it and they don't clean it, there's a cleaning fee. And if they do clean it, then, you know, there's not even a cleaning fee. But I've seen people come in and completely renovate the house, clean it from top to bottom. And there's good people out there. I'm not saying there's not all people are bad. I'm saying there are good people out there. You just haven't found one because you weren't looking for them. You didn't really believe there was one because you're not a good person. Your family's not good people. Your cousins are not good people. Your relatives are not good people. They're all trying to figure out how to not pay their rent. They're all talking to each other about how to not pay their rent. They're all talking about how to get out of paying their car payments. They're all talking about how to get out of going to work. You know, and if that's your family, then you don't trust anybody because you shouldn't. Everybody you associate with is untrustworthy. But if you're a good person, then you know there are good people out there. The problem is you're not looking for them. Why? Because you're a liberal, probably a Democrat, and you believe that everybody's good. No, everybody is not good. There are good people and there are bad people. And the good people act well and are great as tenants, and the bad people are a nightmare. And that's one of the most important things I'm going to teach you if you come to my seminar. So here's what you're going to do right now. You're going to text the word radio to 88007. Text the word radio to 88007, and when you click in there, you're going to get a chance to take a free workshop. Take the free workshop. Find out what we're doing, what you would have to do to get involved with this stuff. And then you can come see me, because I'll be teaching in a couple of weeks here, and you're not going to want to miss it. You want to spend 2 days with me and learn how to do all this stuff. And remember, it's not just for some money. It's for the lifestyle. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.